Hi, I'm Danielle Cato, and glad to have you with us on this last day of March and just days to go before the April general election. You're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio, and today we bring you a debate between candidates running to become Superior's next mayor, Superior City Councilor Brent Fennessy and Douglas County Board Vice Chair Jim Payne sat down with me earlier this week to talk about their visions for the city and what they'd like to accomplish on a number of fronts if elected. We now bring you a recording of that debate. You can also find a copy of this program online later today at wpr.org/superior. So if we could just start off then with you, Brent, if you want to give a little bit of background about yourself and why you're running.
Well, first, I would like to thank Mr. Payne for his time here today, Wisconsin Public Radio, for inviting us in, and really everyone who's turning in to hear our thoughts, our ideas, our vision. My name is Brent Fennessy. I'm a lifelong resident of Superior, graduate of Superior's public and secondary education, and I'm a father who raises my family here. Currently, I serve the citizens of the 5th District as their city councilor. I live in the Central Park area with my wife, Ashley, of 12 years, our three girls, Ava, Nora, and Eileen. Ages 10, 8, and 5. All three of them are enrolled in the Superior School District. I'm committed to the city, and my family have deep roots in this city. For my involvement in the city, I currently serve on the City Council. I serve on the Superior Public Museum Board, Superior Tourism and Development Fund, License and Fees Committee, the Health Insurance Committee. But my involvement in Superior goes well beyond the City Council. I'm an active member of the JCs, one of the founding members of Superior Young Professionals. I'm on the head of the Head of the Lakes United Way. I'm an active church member at North Bay Community Church and many other organizations that I've been involved in my entire adult life. For my career, I'm on the management team at Otis McGee Insurance, where I manage the personal insurance side of the agency. Otis McGee Insurance is the largest independent insurance agency north of the Twin Cities. So I'm no stranger to working with a big budget, no stranger to leading a team of people, and I look forward to the opportunity to leverage that experience in the business community with my Superior government experience to move the city forward. I think we've been stalled all too long as a city, and I look forward to aggressively focusing on not only improving, but growing the many different facets of our city. And that's really the reason that I'm running, is because I see a real opportunity to lead Superior and to move Superior forward.
And Jim?
Yes, I'd also like to thank Brent Fennessy as well as Danielle Cading for hosting us here today. My name is Jim Payne. I was born and raised in the city of Superior out in Billings Park, and I've only ever left this community one time. That was to serve my community in the United States Marine Corps. When I came home from serving my country, I received a stellar local education here at UW-Superior and then an advanced education with a master's degree in advocacy and political leadership from UMD. I am married to my wife, Katie. We both live right here in the UWS District of Superior. I walked over to this forum today. My wife works for the Foster Grandparent and the Retired Senior Volunteer Program through Catholic Charities, and I work for a nonprofit in Duluth called DRCC, serving people with disabilities. So both of us have built lives of service in this community, and we practice that every day. We are both members of Cathedral Church right here, also in downtown Superior. I'm a member of Superior's Club 40 Rotary. I am a Vincentian with the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. And last year, I was the co-chairman of the Lake Superior Dragon Boat Festival. I practice community service every day of my adult life, and that extends into my work in local government. I am the vice chairman of the Douglas County Board. I was just recently elected the vice chairman by my peers on the board, but I've served in local government for more than 7.5 years. I serve as the chairman of our administration committee, overseeing our budget, as well as many other committees and boards through Douglas County. I'm running for mayor because I believe in a city that works for everyone. I believe that we accomplish that by focusing on restorative housing to restore our aging housing stock, and by focusing on increasing wages, median wages within the city of Superior, and by promoting exciting retail development, especially in our downtown, so that this is a great place to live, work, and play. So again, thank you for having me here, Danielle, and I look forward to our conversation.
Well, I'm very glad to have both of you here in the studio to talk about some of the issues facing the city of Superior. And I'd like to start with economic development. And Brent, I'll address my question to you first. Basically, we have existing businesses and a need for new business. What do you see as the vision for economic development for Superior, and how would you carry that out if elected?
Yeah, thanks, Danielle. I think there's a lot of opportunity here. You know, one of the things that when I'm talking to people going door to door, just talking to people, getting their ideas, getting their thoughts, one of the biggest complaints that I'm hearing is that people feel that retail's dead in Superior. For me, I don't buy that. I don't think that the retail is dead. I think that retail has evolved. Retail is changing. And what we're seeing in Superior is niche retail shops, you know, pop up. You look down Tower, and just from the revitalization of Tower Avenue, we're seeing some new exciting businesses pop up, some niche retail, whether that's the Blue Arrow Boutique or the donut shop or the, you know, the candy shop, or there's a gaming, you know, store down there. We're going to see a production brewery at the end of Tower Avenue there. So I think retail as we know it is changing. I think it's changing across the whole, across the nation. Online retail sales are, you know, really destroying our big box stores. So I think what we have to do is, as the trends evolve, we have to we have to evolve with that. So that's for the retail. But I think we also need to aggressively attract industry, attract manufacturing. And that's only going to come by pounding the pavement and having those conversations with people about moving here. Wisconsin has some attractive tax incentives that Minnesota doesn't have. So I do I do foresee some of that as a leg up on Minnesota. And so I think there's an incredible opportunity. And I think it goes to show where we've got a very, very low unemployment rate here in Superior. And I think what that means is that there's room. There's room for growth. And the only way that that's going to happen is by aggressively going after it and pounding the pavement.
Okay. And Jim?
Yeah, I really believe that we have all of the tools that we need to build exciting development within this community. And we're going to accomplish that by investing in ourselves. I'm a very big believer that we have everything that we need to succeed here. Let me start with industry. Most of the industry in the Duluth Superior Harbor happens on the Superior side. We have a strong manufacturing sector here in Superior of people that have invested in this community already. We also have exciting retail that is growing and is really ahead of the curve of the national market. As Brent pointed out, retail nationally is changing, but Superior figured that out a little while ago. What we need to do is invest in exciting retail spaces. This is what the 70s and 80s did with malls. It's what the 80s and 90s did with big box retail. And it's what the 21st century is going to do with downtowns. We want to make an exciting place for you to go and shop at more than one place. Now, when it comes to industry and bringing good jobs in this community, because it's important to remember that retail can't thrive without good customers, we have to make sure that we have high-paying, high-quality jobs that people can build their lives around. Now, I want to do that by investing in the people that have already invested in us. A lot of the industrial sector that we already have here can grow and can improve, but they need skilled labor, they need workers, and they need us to provide incentives to them to help them grow. Now, it is true that Wisconsin does have some fantastic credits for businesses, but local businesses that are already here can also take advantage of those, and I want to help them do that so that every citizen in this community has not just a job, but a good job that allows them to invest in their community and to build a better life for themselves. All told, I think when it comes to economic development, this is a very exciting time for Superior because we have everything we need to invest in ourselves.
Well, and I guess I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that. Just, you know, we hear a lot about incentives, and you, Brent, brought up the state tax incentives. But what can Superior do to incentivize business owners? And I'll start with you this time, Jim.
Sure. One, we put a lot of incentives into attracting people here. Those same incentives can work for promoting new growth from within. So when that comes to retail, we can help with the development of a person that's about to become an entrepreneur through things like the Entrepreneur Fund or our Small Business Center or the Douglas County Revolving Loan Fund. Those are ways to take a person that's already here and make them into a business owner. When it comes to a large industry, we can help with a lot of their overhead by giving them incentives to improve their businesses. One of the programs I helped create at Douglas County was the bringing us into the PACE Commission that allows industrial and commercial businesses to make improvements to their actual properties that make energy improvements that will actually pay for the cost of those loans. And then we want to make sure that we're helping connect businesses with the right tools, like the Wisconsin Jobs Credit that that gives tax incentives to businesses that are growing. As important as it is to try and bring new business and to help promote new business, we can't forget that we have a lot of great business already here. And some of the best economic development we can do is to grow those businesses.
Okay. And Brent?
You know, some of the partners that we can do, the fact that the Wisconsin tax is much more incentivizing for businesses, especially manufacturing, than Minnesota. That is what it is. The businesses already know that, and I think it'll just take a little time for them to slowly start coming over. Epicurean was one of the examples that they moved from Minnesota over here to Wisconsin because of the tax incentives over here. But there's a couple things that we can do. We can strengthen our relationship with WEDEC, and that's the Wisconsin Economic Development Association Commission. They have different programs, different grants. A lot of times what we need to do is just make the developer aware of some of these. The other relationship that I think we can strengthen is the Northeast Regional Planning Commission. That's a fantastic organization that also has some different grants and different tools available. At UWS, there's some opportunities for small business owners to get some advice and to get going. So what we need to do is, when a developer is coming to Superior, we not only need to make them aware of some of these programs. A lot of times what we need to do is sit them down in the same room with WEDEC, with Northeast Regional Planning, with UW Extension to help facilitate some of these grants, some of these programs, because a lot of these grants, it's not just free money. There's a lot of planning that goes involved. There's a lot of tracking. There's a lot of paperwork. And a lot of times it scares off some developers. So if we can sit them down literally in the same room with some of these people who are living this, breathing it every day, and who are the professionals on this, we can make a success out of it. The other thing we can do as a city is the Development Association, going back to the retail, the Development Association, they're in the infant stages of doing a zip code study where they're asking small businesses, medium businesses, large businesses, where they're getting their business from. And what that'll do is that'll give us another tool in our toolbox when we're talking to some of these developers, talking to some of the retailers, that we're bigger than just a city the size of 27,000. We're getting some of our money from the shoppers are coming from across the bridge, are coming from outside of Superior. And so there is some things that we can do as a city. We just need to strengthen those relationships with the people that we already have those with.
Okay, and I want to move on to housing, which has been a key priority for the city. And Brent, at the Explore Superior Forum last week, you said you want to focus on redevelopment of existing stock. And you support like a 54 unit apartment complex that's been proposed in the mm-hmm. city. How would you go about redevelopment of existing stock, or how would you support that in the office of mayor if elected?
Yep. So some of there's some areas in Superior where there's a substantial amount of blighted homes on, let's even say one city block. The beauty of that is there's already the infrastructure in place. There's already curb and gutters. There's already water, electricity, all that going there. What I would like to do, or what I would like to see, is the city use some community development block grant funds to purchase those. And it would have to be a strategic effort where there's not a lot of homes on there, so it's not as big of an impact for the renters. But then develop that into some nice townhomes. We see some of that over in Duluth where it's they've taken some blighted blocks, redeveloped it into some great low income housing, and quality housing, townhomes, and some nice little developments. Because then what that does is that when the community sees that the city's interested and focused on fixing up a part of Superior, then you see landlords, hop on that as well. But what I'd also like to do is look at some redevelopment for not only low income, but also market rate. One of the things that I absolutely do support is that 54-unit complex that's they're looking at the old Central High School, or the Central Junior High, rather, spot right behind Enbridge. I absolutely support that. The housing study that was done a couple years ago says we need that. And then I think that also with that, that's an example of the city back about 10 years ago, right before the housing market crashed, they used some some block grant funding to purchase some homes. And now we're having the opportunity, now that the housing market's starting to climb back up, of repurposing those. That's a perfect example of redevelopment, and that's one of the only ways that we're going to fix our aging housing stock.
And Jim, I know you have some other ideas on how you'd like to address housing in the city.
Yes, my biggest priority is to turn renters into homeowners. One of the big problems that our housing study that we commissioned through the administration committee at Douglas County, partnering with the city of Superior, was that Superior is saturated in its renters market, and that we have a higher percentage of a higher rate of renters to homeowners than Wisconsin as a whole and as the country as a whole. In fact, our home ownership rate is lower than the Douglas County rural area as well. And so I want to help a number of the people that are renting in this community become homeowners, because as we all know, home ownership is the silver bullet to economic growth in a municipality. So some of the things that I want to do differently, I want to use CDBG grant money to help people within this community to make improvements into the homes that they already own, to help them restore some of the more blighted or dangerous properties in the community and keep people in their homes so that they don't end up losing their home to the condemnation process, coding issues, or even inability to pay their taxes. We want them to stay in their homes. This is a program that's working very well in the Douglas County rural area and used to work very well in the city of Superior. I want to bring it back. I also want to take many of these blighted properties that we see in this community, and I do not want to tear them down. I want to see them restored. We often talk about Superior having some of the oldest housing stock in the state of Wisconsin. That's true, but we also have some of the most historic and beautiful housing stock if we would simply invest in it. Now, when I look at programs in the city of Minneapolis or the city of Milwaukee, that when the city reclaims these properties through the condemnation process or through the tax deed process, rather than tear them down at city expense and leave an empty lot that, until it's redeveloped, will produce no revenue for the city and frequently takes a very long time to redevelop, let's help homeowners in the $100,000 to $150,000 budget range, which is our largest budget range according to that housing study, to invest in these properties with minimal overhead and restore them. Not only do we know that it works, but it keeps revenue flowing to the city and beautifies neighborhoods in a much tighter time scale.
Brent, you have a rebuttal?
Not necessarily even just a rebuttal. Just a little, just to kind of add on what I said before. And although, I would absolutely love to see a renter turn into a homeowner, we can't lose focus on the fact that the housing study that was done said that we need new homes. And if we lose focus on that, we're going to lose focus on growing our town. We can't just zero in on one aspect of our housing, because our housing problem, crisis, whatever you want to call it, is multifaceted. And if we only focus on that one effort of turning a homeowner or a renter into a homeowner, we're going to miss the boat. The housing studies show that we need many, many different, and that's mixed-use housing, new development, increase in the maintenance of our existing housing stock. And nobody knows about the restoration of and the ability in some of our older homes better than I do. About 4 years ago, my wife and I, we bought a dilapidated 1892 Queen Anne Victorian, and we spent the last 4 years restoring it, bringing it back to its original state. We poured our time, our money into that. It was actually a year and a half before we actually lived there. So I absolutely do know that there's some gems out there. But it's difficult for somebody to do that, put in the time, put in the effort, put in the money, into some of these homes. But to address our housing problem, it needs to be multifaceted and not just one prong approach.
Jim, do you have any final words on housing?
Sure. Yes, the housing study certainly said that we need multiple different approaches to housing. But when it identified our problem in the rental market, it specifically identified that we have a near max occupancy of rentals. So what I want to do is free up that market by turning people into homeowners. Now, we do have a lot of vacant houses in the city or houses that are about to become vacant that would otherwise be lost. This is what's already happening in the city of Superior. Last year, the city had a negative net new construction rate. That means they tore more down than they built. I want to reverse that trend and bring in many of the things that are working very well in Douglas County. We have a much higher home ownership rate, including double the home ownership rate for people living in poverty. We have a much lower rental rate. We have a much higher new construction rate in Douglas County. So we know that these programs work for housing of every level. When we open up the market and make it more competitive, new developers come in. That's how the free market works.
You're listening to a debate between Superior mayoral candidates Brent Fennessy and Jim Payne. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but stick around. We'll have more from them about their views on city services, tourism, drug abuse, and diversity in Superior. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy Friday. Superior mayoral candidates Jim Payne and Brent Fennessy are campaigning in the last several days leading up to the election this coming Tuesday. And earlier this week, they sat down with me in the KUWS studios to talk about what they'd like to see for the city if elected. We bring you more of their debate, beginning with their thoughts on city services. We have about a $28, $29 billion budget in the city of Superior. Million. Wow. We'd be doing pretty well if we had that much money. But $28, $29 million for the city of Superior. And with levy limits and state restrictions, it's been a difficult balancing act for city officials to pass a balanced budget and still maintain the level of services that we have here in the community. And one thing that I've been wondering is just, because there's always competing requests for funds, and we see new things come up, like, for instance, the request for more money for the Superior Police Department so they can hire more officers as they're seeing some retiring. Where do you find money to provide the services that people value? And I'll start with you, Jim.
Sure. Well, first, I'd like to point out that this is something that I've been doing for several years now. I've been on our administration committee for, I believe, 6 years, and just recently was elevated to the chairmanship of that committee. We have to build a budget nearly double the size of the city's every single year. So what we do is we've adopted the priorities-based budget system where we identify what's important for the citizens of Douglas County, and we look to invest in those things. Now, in our case, that was some priorities like infrastructure and our environment, sustainability, compassion. So we invest in things like highways, doubling our commitment there. We invested in outreach to veterans, increasing our support for our veterans, and increasing our health and human services budget by providing more social workers to address many of the social problems that we faced up here in Northwest Wisconsin. Now, that obviously has to come from somewhere. So what we've done is, of course, looked for more efficiencies throughout our entire budget, and we find new ones every year as new technology comes in, or as we have staffing changes, as we generally progress. And then we have to, when budgets get tougher, we have to go back and look at who's going to bear the pain. Because at some point, if our income does not match our priorities, we're going to have to either cut back on our priorities, usually meaning government services, or we have to go to our citizens and ask for more, or we have to ask our employees to shoulder more of the load. So in our case, we took a balanced approach, and we asked everybody to share the pain and invest in the things that are important in growing this community. And I think the proof is in the budget that we turned out. We've shown regular growth in Douglas County, and I believe a budget that builds community and prosperity in Northwest Wisconsin.
What we need to do is we need to get creative. And you mentioned the Superior Police Department finding the funds to hire on a couple new officers. Where we were able to pull that money from was there was a fund that was set aside for when the police department would get matching, or when the police department would get grants, and they would have to match some funds with those grants. They would pull it from this fund. Well, this fund got to the point where it was substantial and it was bigger than what the need was. So we pulled the money from that fund into the regular police fund budget to hire on a couple of additional officers. So what we need to do is kind of get creative, and that's where the priority-based budgeting really comes into play. It's what I would like to do, and what we have a consensus from the city councilors is to take the, you know, what the county did with the priority-based budgeting, but go one step further and do, you know, figure out the priorities. But the one step further that I'm talking about is getting the input from the citizens. I would like to have town hall meetings in every one of the districts, do online surveys, do regular mailed surveys to find out what those priorities are to the citizens. And then when we find out those priorities, then we can adjust where we want to put our money. But what one other thing that I'm going to be bringing that comes directly from the business community is the question why. And that's a question that we do on a regular basis at the agency, where what we do is we go through each department and each procedure, each process, and we ask why. Why are we doing things this way? Why are we doing things that way? Because I think the city, we've gotten accustomed to just doing it because we did it last year and we did it the year before. And then, you know, 20 years down the road, we don't really know why we're providing this service that really nobody's using, and why we're funding an aspect of it that nobody's using. So one thing that one of the first things that I'm going to do is go through each department and ask why. Why are we doing that? And then the other thing I'm going to do upon taking office would be to create a budget and fees task force. And that task force would be tasked with getting that information from the citizens, finding out what's important to them, so that when we do move to a priority-based budgeting system, we're one step ahead of the game. So I think there is absolutely ways that we can solve this without without putting too much of a strain on the priorities that are low. But the beauty of that is then we get to, you know, fund more the priorities that are high to the citizens of Superior.
Well, and I'd like to move on to tourism and the Better City Superior initiative, which would create a convention center downtown. And I guess I'm wondering how both of you feel about that project, and also tying that into tourism. You both talked about developing the waterfront or using the waterfront in some form to help bring people into Superior. And Jimmy, I'd like to start with you on that.
Sure. I believe that the most important part of our retail and entertainment development is to build relationships to water. Now, the Superior is mostly shoreline in that we're something of a peninsula here in the St. Louis River and Lake Superior and the Lake Superior Harbor. So we have many different ways to access the water, but when we talk about downtown development, for most of our modern history, we have ignored that relationship with the water and simply built industry along that waterfront. We have new opportunities now in the 21st century to abut our entertainment and retail district right up to the Tower and Hewitt Slips and connect our downtown area in the north end of Tower to an exciting industrial retail entertainment district, the kind of places that are exciting in cities across the United States, but that would be absolutely unique, not just in the Midwest, but across the country here. So the important thing, though, is that we connect customers to experiences. Now, we have to build our customer base out. It starts with the citizens of Superior that already know the fun things to do in downtown. We also want to make it easier for people in the city of Duluth to come over and experience our city, because the far north part of Superior is actually the very center of the Twin Ports. So if they can get there easier and have fun things to do immediately upon landing, they might push on and experience more of our city. And then that's when we approach the question of tourism. It's very important that we build a community that is very fun for us to experience, that we as citizens of Superior and Duluth and the greater Twin Ports want to experience every single day. If we enjoy it that much, then people will come and visit us. This is actually the development model that Duluth has been pursuing for years. They didn't develop with a tourism model. They developed with a model to make it fun for Duluthians to go out and experience retail and entertainment. And it was so fun and it was so easy for people to connect with fun commercial enterprises as well as their natural environment that people started to naturally visit. So again, let's invest in a fun place for us to live, and then people will want to visit it.
Well, first, to address the Better City Superior initiative, I do want to go on record saying that I've supported it from its infant stages, and I'll continue to support it in the future. That is a wonderful outside-the-box idea that came directly from the business community. That wasn't government just kind of playing government and creating this. This was a group of local business owners who came to the city with this it's outside the box idea. We absolutely need a convention center. We need more quality hotels. I'm excited about the one that's going up on Highway 2. I'm excited about the renovations that Barker's Island has done, but we need another quality hotel. We already do see some tourism, and as I sit on the Superior Tourism and Development Fund, we have the opportunity to give some of those funds to some tourism. But some of the ice racing events or some of the events that have happened over in Barker's Island that bring people from out of town in. We've got the golf course where they figure about 50% of their membership is outside of 54880. The museums bring some tourism in. The I'm one of the co-organizers of the Gichigumi Brewfest. It's the largest fundraiser for the Superior JCs. That brings in people from outside. So we have some things that are working slowly. I think there's some things that we can do better promote some of the things that we do. But we also can't focus on tourism alone, because that's not necessarily going to build our city. We have some needs, some bigger needs, in my opinion, here in the city, that we can't be putting extra funds into tourism when we have some bigger needs, here in the city. But kind of going full circle, the Better City Superior Project will give a tremendous, tremendous boost to our downtown, and will contribute to a thriving downtown that's already happening organically. And the Better City Superior Project would just be a wonderful addition to that.
Well, and I just want to move on to drug abuse in the Superior community, because that's one issue that's just gotten worse over the years. And this year, or last year, I mean, the Superior Police Department and Douglas County Sheriff's Office sees the most heroin they've ever seen in recent history. What would both of you like to see done to improve access to treatment and addressing this problem in the community? And Jim, I'll start with you.
Sure. Well, there is quite simply no easy solution to this very serious problem, but it is an absolute crisis that we need to solve today. Unfortunately, a lot of our resources have been evaporating. The state of Wisconsin has not increased the Medicaid reimbursement rate in more than 20 years, and we need to view our drug abuse problem as an addiction problem. I believe that law enforcement in Northwest Wisconsin and partnering with Duluth does a fantastic job in attacking the people that are exploiting and victimizing our community, but that will never solve the problem. And they're the first people to admit that. We need to address addiction as a mental health crisis. And the state of Wisconsin nor the federal government are giving us the tools to be able to do that. So when, like we've done with infrastructure and like we've done with economic development, it's time to come up with a local solution. It will be very expensive. It will be a collaboration. It'll have to be a collaboration between the city of Superior, the school district of Superior, Douglas County, and probably our neighbors over in Duluth and St. Louis County. But we're going to have to make substantial investments, because right now this is not just the biggest economic crisis we've ever seen. Drug abuse in Douglas County and Superior is a multi-million dollar annual industry. This is a moral crisis. This affects nearly every family in the city of Superior. So we're going to have to make some substantial investments in a dedicated detox facility so that people can dry out, make the choice to seek long-term inpatient care, and then have follow-up aftercare. This is what law enforcement is begging for, because law enforcement knows that the largest mental health facility in Douglas County right now is the Douglas County Jail, and that simply isn't acceptable. We need to build better resources between the people that are working for the city, like law enforcement and first responders, as well as people in the school district, like teachers and administrators, and people at the county like social workers. Every aspect of that team needs to invest in this project of helping people to beat this absolute crisis that we're facing.
And Brent?
I think it's more than just a drug problem. I think it's clearly a drug epidemic. And cities across the nation are dealing with this. I think it's hitting us a lot harder because we're, I would consider us a metro city. If you go out 25 miles from Superior, it's about a population of 200,000. So I think it's hitting us a lot harder. Part of the problem is we can't police our way out of this. It's we've got a wonderful, wonderful drug task force, and they're having many successes. If you can consider it a success, when they're when they're seizing these drugs, these criminals, but it's not solving the problem. They're doing a wonderful job, and it's not enough. Because the problem is jail is a great place for a drug addict to dry out. But then what happens is they serve their time, and then they go back on the street to repeat the same cycle, do the same crimes. And not only are we seeing the crime of drug abuse, but what it does, it also spurs property crimes. So the citizens of Superior, don't feel as safe because of this. So it's a multi-level problem. And part of the problem is coming from the state. The Medicare reimbursement is absolutely terrible, especially in comparison to Minnesota. So that's one of the things that, as mayor, I will be spending some time down in Madison fighting for some money to get a drug treatment facility in Douglas County. Because part of the other problem is the drugs can be sold four times more than they can be sold in Chicago or Milwaukee. And so there's a good market for it up here. So people are attracted to that, to sell their drugs up here. And we need to, some tool to stop that. And I think that tool is a drug treatment facility.
Well, and Brent, I wanted to address my next question to you and then to Jim. You mentioned working with the folks down in Madison to try and bring dollars up here, which has been a struggle as Madison has realized its own financial challenges. Although just the other day, they announced a package of 11 bills that would include funding for regional treatment centers and other ways to address this drug problem. But what would you see yourself doing if elected in the role as mayor and communicating with the state on mm-hmm. issues of importance to the city?
Yeah, and that it all starts with relationships. And it's developing those relationships down in Madison with Republicans and Democrats alike. And that's why I think that I'm going to have a successful time down there is because I'll be coming in with an independent voice. The city has had some successes going down to Madison and asking for some money. I'll give you the example of the oil pipeline terminal tax. I think it was about 6 years ago, the city went down there, we were getting zero. From the oil that flows through our city, we were getting zero for that. We went down to they went down to Madison and fought for our fair share. And now that money is in the millions, it's helping fund balance our budget. And it's also being put in the capital improvement plan to, for these repairs and for police squad cars and our capital improvements. And so I'm optimistic that we can, with the right relationships and with a little bit of an aggressiveness, go down and fight for our fair share of money. Because we've seen it. If you look at the history, we've seen the money just go down and down and down and down. We need to reverse that trend. We need to first stabilize that trend, but then reverse it. Because what we need to do is we need to get Madison to realize that we're bigger than the city the size of 27,000. We've got more problems because of the metro area that we're in. And once we get Madison to realize that, I think we're going to get more money here.
And Jim?
Yeah, so I absolutely agree that relationships are important in Madison. That's why I've been going to Madison and fighting for this community since long before I was ever elected to public office. In fact, one of my first ventures down to Madison in Superior Days was as a student at this university where we fought for the Swenson Academic Building that now stands across just a few feet from where we are today. So we've been having successes down there by talking to people, but by playing the long game and by building relationships and laying the groundwork for the successes that we need sometimes years in advance. And when we talk about successes in mental health or challenging drug abuse, that comes from bringing this down there and having actual conversations with decision makers on a regular basis. So this a lot of our success comes from folks like myself and Supervisor Pat Ryan and Health and Human Services Director Pat Shahan and Dave Longsdorf of the Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Coordinator in Douglas County, sitting down with several secretaries of Health and Human Services under more than one administration to tell them that these are not just our problems, but to show them what the solution can be, to help them to help us. So this is a very important relationship. This is work that I've been doing for several years and that I look to continue to do in the mayor's office.
And my last question for both of you revolves around diversity. And we have the University of Wisconsin-Superior, which has a large number of international students that attend that campus and live in our community. And then we have seen our communities of color in the Twin Ports grow, although, I mean, typically it is primarily a white population in the city. But what would both of you do to promote diversity or least maintain relationships with communities of color here in the city of Superior? And Brent, I'll start with you.
Yeah, thanks. I think the one thing we need to do is it's easy for us in a community that's primarily white to think that we don't have a racism problem, to think that we don't have a problem at all. But I think the first thing we need to do is recognize that it's real and recognize that there's an opportunity for conversations. And that's what we need to do, is we need to be willing to sit down and have those conversations, to figure out what they need. I think we can take a page out of the Police Chief Alexander's book, where he's made a fantastic effort trying to curb this and trying to break down some of those barriers that do exist. And I look forward to working with him more than I do now as a city councilor. But I think we need to continue more of those initiatives that Superior Police Chief is doing. And I think we also need to celebrate what UWS is doing. UWS has over 50 countries represented here. And it's well over 50 if you include the online enrollment. So somehow UWS has cultivated an environment where they're overly welcoming to people of all walks of life, and I think we need to do that. I've already started the conversations with Chancellor Walker, and I look forward to having more of those conversations to figure out what are they doing that the city's not doing, so we can improve what we're doing.
And Jim.
This is a very diverse community, and I really started to experience and learn that right here at UWS. Many of the students in our international student community here became my close friends, and I got to learn and help celebrate their cultures. This university also afforded me the opportunity to study abroad and immerse myself in the Muslim world and learn more about Islam and how that affects us back here in Superior. This community was at the national forefront of the LGBTQ rights movement throughout this country, and many people in this community sacrificed their careers and sometimes their public safety in the pursuit of those rights. This is a diverse community. This has been our whole history. I want to make a commitment to continue living a life among people of color, among people that of different races, creeds, and gender identities, and I intend to be the first mayor in more than 16 years to march in Superior's Pride Parade. I believe that it's very important that we recognize the many different voices that have built this community, because historically, that's who we have always been. While communities of color are now growing, and even immigrant communities are growing within this city, we've always been an immigrant community. People of all ethnicities have come to this city specifically to try and build a life for themselves. This is who we are, and I want to continue to celebrate that and work to make sure that every person, regardless of how they identify themselves, is able to build a high-quality life right here in northwestern Wisconsin.
Well, I really appreciate both of you taking the time to talk about all of these issues affecting the city of Superior, and wish you both the best of luck as people head to the polls on April 4th.
Well, I appreciate you having us in.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you. Again, you were just listening to a debate between Superior mayoral candidates Brent Fennessy and Jim Payne. The election is this coming Tuesday, April 4th. You can hear this debate again on our website at wpr.org/superior. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, and when we come back, we'll have news of the week as covered by the Superior Bureau of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading, and this is Hear Me Out. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is News of the Week as covered by the Superior Bureau. A federal grant program that's paid for $24.5 million in infrastructure projects that have benefited Wisconsin in the last 4 years would be cut under President Trump's budget proposal. The program awarded $500 million for transportation projects nationwide last year. Adele Yorty with the Duluth Seaway Port Authority says they received a $10 million Tiger grant in recent years for a Twin Ports dock expansion.
We looked both to state and federal grant dollars that we're able to couple our own revenues with to be able to renew the infrastructure down here on the Kluwer Terminal.
President Trump's budget proposal states such projects are usually eligible for funding under other transportation formula programs, but critics of the president's budget say those programs only provide enough for maintenance and haven't kept pace with inflation. A Twin Ports partnership will give businesses easier, more cost-effective access to new international markets. Now importers and exporters can ship larger containers via Canadian National's rail lines. A rail car mover pulls the first six shipping containers that arrived in the Twin Ports on CN's rail network. Von Takota with the Duluth Seaway Port Authority says the partnership is a game changer.
Most of this traffic would just pass us by without this service offering.
Coda says they'll be able to ship containers by rail to the Atlantic, Pacific, and Gulf Coast. John Lamb with Lake Superior Warehousing says they expect to draw in more business.
We expect to and hope to be a very strong player to support forest products exports. We certainly hope to be a major opportunity for the ag community to have new gateways to get their product out.
Lamb says that could mean more jobs at the port and for Midwestern businesses that save on freight costs. A scandal involving UW Oshkosh has prompted more scrutiny of University of Wisconsin foundations statewide. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported this week that UW Superior is among those being scrutinized over a bailout from UW System. The Journal Sentinel reports that UWS was unable to raise $13 million in private money that the foundation promised to support several building projects on campus. UW System's former president, Kevin Riley, gave UW Superior a $7.2 million bridge loan to keep building construction going. That money came from the system's cash balances, which have been scrutinized by Republican lawmakers in recent years. UW System President Ray Cross forgave the remaining $5.3 million loan that UW Superior's foundation was supposed to pay. A UW System spokeswoman told the Sentinel that UWS did everything right because the loan was awarded to the campus, not the foundation. UW Oshkosh's former chancellor and chief business officer are the subject of a civil lawsuit for mingling millions in state and private money in violation of Wisconsin's constitution and UW rules. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told reporters Thursday unless there was widespread fraud or UW officials knew about UW Oshkosh's transfer and failed to act, the situation shouldn't impact decisions as legislators put together their budget. His position contrasts that of Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, who earlier on Thursday said the allegations could have an impact on how much money UW receives. A warmer winter has meant an early sap run for Wisconsin maple syrup producers. The spring warm-up may soon spell the end of the season. When the maple trees start budding, that's when people in the sugar bush stop collecting sap to make maple syrup. Teresa Barone with the Wisconsin Maple Syrup Producers Association says warmer weather may mean the end of the sap run for central and southern Wisconsin.
We tapped about a week earlier than we have in the past, and we're going to probably be a week to 2 weeks done earlier this year than last year due to this warm-up this week.
But Charlie Ray says he's got about 120 taps out in the Bayfield Peninsula and is setting more.
I don't think we'll be done early at this point because it seems like everything's staying pretty cool.
Paul DeMaine is editor of News from Indian Country and a member of the Oneida Nation. DeMaine says erratic winter weather has made for an on and off season instead of a steady sap run.
We're probably into about now, at the end of March, about the third or fourth run. And the last week and a half has been a good run, and we're anticipating that it'll run until the end of this week.
Barone says Wisconsin produced around 235,000 gallons of maple syrup last year. Production has grown about 15% since 2014. The League of Women Voters in Ashland and Bayfield counties hosted a forum about money and politics this week in Ashland. The featured speaker was Matt Rothschild, executive director of the Liberal Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Rothschild says Wisconsin needs a rewrite of campaign finance laws. He says lawmakers should reverse a move that increased direct contributions to candidates up to $20,000 in 2015.
I mean, our politics is becoming a playground for the super rich and now for corporations. In Wisconsin, for the first time in 110 years, corporations are able to give directly to political parties. And I think that's crazy.
Rothschild says the 2010 Supreme Court decision on Citizens United has resulted in more private dollars being spent on elections at the national level.
Then there's the doctrine of corporations are persons and money is speech. That doctrine has been enshrined in Supreme Court decisions now for decades, and that needs to be turned over. And the best way to do that is with a constitutional amendment that would say corporations aren't persons and money isn't speech.
Rothschild says 97 communities in Wisconsin have passed referenda in favor of a constitutional amendment. He says 9 more have placed the question on the ballot for the April elections. Thieves are stealing birch wood from northern Wisconsin forests. People are illegally cutting and selling wood to buyers, supplying demand for wedding and home decor. Buck Pettingill is an assistant forestry administrator in Washburn County. Pettingill says he first started noticing the thefts last fall. Since then, he says more than 1,700 birch trees have been illegally harvested from their county forest.
The individuals I caught were actually bundling the limbs. They're cutting the tree down, they're taking the limbs off the tops, and apparently the limbs are being used in some decorative fashion.
Wisconsin DNR Conservation Warden Dave Zebro says state, federal, and local officials are trying to get a handle on the scope of the problem.
What parts of the state this is occurring, and then, again, how can we try to minimize it? We don't want to necessarily get a group of people in the room and say, hey, how can we write a bunch of tickets?
Zebro says they want to educate birch buyers and sellers on how to legally obtain birch wood. John Phillips of Hayward runs a side business where he sells homemade birch picture frames and other crafts. Phillips says he buys permits from the county or state to use dead birch wood. He says he's worried how the thefts will affect his reputation.
People are going to question, you know, where did that birch branch come from? And then now when people see me drive, when they're driving down the road, they look at you funny because you have birch on your vehicle. I'm not going to stop doing it because I do it the right way.
Ed Schmoker with Winter Woods out of Glidden says they sell birch wood to people using it as decoration in their homes. He says they let sellers know that they won't buy wood that was obtained illegally.
If people are doing it wrong and stuff, you know, that's what law enforcement is for. And if, you know, it's like anything else, they're going to get caught one of these days.
Federal, state, and local officials will meet at the Spooner DNR office next Thursday to talk about ways to prevent theft on forest land. And that's the news of the week as covered by the Superior Bureau of Wisconsin Public Radio, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.